Hello and welcome to Talking HE. My name is Santanu Vasant. This is a special episode to mark the 30th anniversary of the Association for Learning Technology, ALT, the Joint Information Systems Committee, JISC, and the Staff and Educational Developers Association, CEDA. In this episode, we speak to Paul Bailey, Head of Co-Design at JISC. We discuss Paul's memories of ALT and CEDA in the early days, what's the most significant change in learning technology in the past 30 years, how his relationships with ALT, JISC and CEDA have changed during the years, and where he sees learning technology in the next 2 to 5 years. We hope you enjoy this episode.
My name is Paul Bailey. I'm head of co-design within JISC. I head up a small team where we're looking at developing new products and new services within JISC around learning and teaching, research to support the community.
Thinking back to the early days of ALT, JISC and CEDA, what are your memories of learning technology?
I was thinking back to this in 1993 when all this kicked off. I wasn't actually in universities then. I was teaching adult education in South Devon. But as soon after that, so the 92 was the sort of transition for the new universities. So I got a job at the University of Plymouth. So it was probably only about couple of years into being a university then. There were still signs up around Plymouth which said Plymouth Polytechnic, if you wandered around. And I got a job there writing computer-assisted learning material. It was a research project from somebody in geography. And I went there to write some learning materials in study skills, and then did some stuff around geography packages to support mostly human geography. And in those days, everything was PC-based or Mac-based, but it was all on a personal computer. The internet was just starting to get an impact. To do anything over a server was quite difficult. The Netscape browser was just released in about 94. That was just coming about. And we hadn't really heard of virtual learning environments at that point. So it was all very much, everything came on CDs or floppy disks or something like that. No distributed BB. But it was quite an exciting time. I've come from a background. I'd actually been a programmer. I worked as an writing engineering software, and I'd worked in a company writing finance software. I'd come out of university, did a PGCE, so I had a teaching qualification, but then I went into programming. Came out of programming and taught in colleges. So I had this blend of skills. I understood pedagogy, I understood learning and teaching. I also had a background in technology, and I was entering a field where learning technology was just starting to emerge. It was just coming about. I mean, there'd been technology in education for years, but there was this new field of learning technology just happening. And that's where I sort of hit the university, and that's where I started to come across ALT and CEDA. I must admit, I didn't hear of JISC for at least another 6 years after that. JISC was not as well known as I hope it is now. So I used to go off to CEDA and ALT-C conferences. I'm trying to remember if it was Milton Keynes. I certainly went to one in Milton Keynes and probably one in Glasgow as well. And in those days, I used to have to drive there and take a full desktop PC and monitor and lug it to the demo area. And then I'd spend like 2 or 3 days maybe doing a few demos, spending just at a demo stand, demoing the software that we developed. At Plymouth, I've got a story on that one as well. About 18 months after I started, we launched a new initiative at Plymouth, and I got the job managing that. It was called Technology Supported Learning. We based it on Oxford Brookes University had done a technology term where they promoted the use of technology in learning and teaching. And Plymouth decided they would do this, but they'd fund a whole year project. So we funded some projects, funded people to develop materials for learning at that point. And we promoted the use of technology in learning and teaching. We'd run staff development events. This was all out of their education development unit at the University of Plymouth. So we did that for about a year. It was quite interesting. The word anything these days, you know, artificial intelligence, AI comes up. In those days, you just had to put the word internet or web in your workshop title, and you get 20 or 30 people turn up. If it was about pedagogy or something like that, you'd be lucky to get two or three. So anything with the word technology and anything with the word web was big. It was taking off. People were starting to use it. About a year or so after that, we got Teaching and Learn Technology Program, Phase 3 funding. We got some funding there. And we developed as a consortium, we developed a program to support the embedding of learning technologies. And that's where I'd been to a lot of CEDA conferences, got involved with the CEDA network. But at that point, we started developing this course, and that's where I started talking to CEDA about how they might recognize that course. So that became part of the CEDA professional development framework, which I think it still is.
Yes, still is.
Part of that, yes, yes. I always remember both the Alt and CEDA events. We did a lot of dissemination at those conferences. Always a great community, got a lot of very good feedback. Some brilliant mentors there, you know, Carol and David Baum were around, and Phil and Sally. Lots of people that you know, people might not know now. I was much younger, about 20, 30 years younger. So, you know, they were real mentors to me then, and very helpful and very developmental. And they brought something to the whole experience. They understood the pedagogy. They understood that work. They knew a bit about the technology, but they had quite, you know, admitted this was all new to them, and they were quite happy to sort of admit that. So this was the day where, you know, the whole thing of learning technologies was just starting to sort of happen and to come about. Although we had the Association of Learning Technologists, it was interesting. A lot of the learning technologists in those days were academics or professionals within universities who had an interest in technology and had developed that use and were starting to actually use it. Whereas I suppose I saw myself as an educational developer rather than a learning technologist. I was involved in that field. But again, with that use of technology, I remember turning around to, I think it was the director of IT and academic, no, it was director of academic services at Plymouth. And he'd say, well, what would you like to achieve in the next year or 2 years? And I said, I'd like to make myself redundant. I'd like to make it so that I don't have to be embedding technology into learning and teaching. The academics are actually capable of doing that themselves. And I think about 30 years on, maybe we're getting there.
Maybe.
How has your relationship with Alt changed over the last couple of decades?
I suppose I started off at Alt. For me, Alt was an important conference for me to go and share what I was doing, to get feedback on. Then it was the software I was developing, and then after that it was around the Embedding Learning Technologies program. So getting that sort of feedback from the community, that was very, very important. As I suppose when I got into JISC, at one point for quite a few years, Alt was the most amazing place for JISC projects to share what they were doing. And for me, it was also an opportunity to gauge where learning technology was within the sector. You could almost guarantee every year you went to Alt, you'd go, it's all about VLEs this year. Everyone was talking about how they were using developing courses on their VLEs. Then a few years later, it'll be, oh, it's all about lecture capture. It's all about that. by going to the Alt-C conferences, by engaging with Alt-C, you could track that sort of development, what was important, what was crucial within the sector. So that's always been quite useful. And I suppose in the latter years, we did quite a lot of work at Alt conferences promoting new and emerging technologies. We had a program looking at EdTech, looking at student EdTech projects, and promoting some of those. And that was very interesting to do, to get the reaction from the community on those. Always found student ideas around new EdTech was always very innovative, very interesting. With one or two exceptions, it was very, very difficult for them to actually make those into commercial products. I know of one. There were several. There was one that's really sort of kept going from the early days of what we did there. Yeah.
What was your first engagement with JISC?
My first engagement really with JISC was on a funded project. We did a project which, to put it crudely, we counted the number of learning technologists in universities in the UK. And it was quite an interesting activity. I couldn't tell you how many there were. But what was quite, I think, interesting at that time was that about 1 in 10 people had a role as a learning technologist. And the other 9 out of 10, I think it may have been more than that, the majority of them were these academics or professionals in institutions who had learning technology as part of their role, educational developers, lecturers, whatever. So I did that, and then I went to the University of Bristol as a learning technologist and worked there for a year. And then I got an opportunity to join JISC and joined their teaching learning program, supporting and developing projects at JISC. And so I moved into that with that learning and teaching sort of background. So that's how I came to be in JISC. Again, I always say that if you plan your career, you can manage to go somewhere and do something. Whereas if you don't, you will end up in JISC, because it's a place you sort of gravitate when you've got this mixed bag of skills you've developed. That was a bit of project management, a bit of technology, a bit of pedagogy. It was quite a mixed bag that you needed to be able to work in JISC back 20 years ago. And that's where I ended up.
How has JISC changed in the last few decades?
In some ways, quite a lot. I mean, structurally, in terms of its size, it's no longer a committee. It's now an actual company and a business. I think the big difference now in JISC is that JISC is seeing itself more as a thought leadership leading the way. Whereas before, I think certainly the sector saw it as well as providing the network and the academic resources, which is still a big part of what JISC does. The sector saw JISC as funding projects within the sector, whereas now we're helping to support that development within the sector, which has made, a big difference. I think it helps to make a wider benefit across the whole sector rather than just funding individual institutions.
What are your thoughts on how JISC will move forward in the next 2 to 5 years?
JISC as a company is starting to address its own carbon footprint. It's got its own net zero targets. And I think because a lot of what JISC does is scope 3, so it's indirect. The indirect impact of what JISC does tends to be what its carbon footprint is. Reducing that's quite important for JISC. So, reducing our travel, not flying so much, some of the stuff we've been doing in terms of technology in our offices, that smart technology. It's all stuff that we're using to help move forward our own case, but it's all stuff we can then help to pass on to institutions and to share. So I think the future there, all IT is going to have to be environmentally sustainable if it's going to be viable. And I think that's going to make a big difference to the sector. The second one I wanted to mention is the impact of AI. I think that is going to become a much growing part of JISC's agenda. We're already the National Centre for AI in Tertiary Education that we set up is having a huge demand on it, more than probably cope with at the moment, but it's doing a great job in providing some pilots and projects, providing information and guidance to the sector. And I think going forward, just need to become, you know, experts in how to use AI in terms of the advising sector, and not just around learning and teaching, but I think there's huge potential in terms of how AI could be used to manage and control the network, manage the use of resources, manage and help support staff in that workload. Huge potential in research for the use of AI, automation, those sorts of areas. But I think AI, machine learning, is going to have a huge impact. Again, the generative AI stuff's been a big accelerator to that, but I think it was coming anyway. I think it will continue to grow. And then the third area I thought I'd mention is something that we are looking at the moment. I've been looking at for the last sort of year or so. Is the sort of emerging, or probably emerged in some ways, new models of education. There's a sort of driven by the growth in student numbers, driven by, I suppose, the use of technology. We've seen a much greater diversification of the business models around education. I'll give some examples. We've got Minerva, which is a US-based institution where you can study a year or some time in different institutions. The idea of you move around, maybe not so very environmentally friendly, but, you know, gives you that different experience. The London Interdisciplinary School, where you're working on a project or an idea or a challenge to come up with something. And I actually quite like the multiverse apprenticeship stuff that you and Blair's come up with as a model of learning, you know, the idea that you do an apprenticeship in higher education, you go off and you work and you bring that back in, that sort of in. I think in my day, it used to be called a sandwich degree.
Yes.
Or, you know, or work-based degree. So there's these different emerging models, and there's quite a few of them. And I think what we will see in the sector is some institutions will diversify. They will start to do more things because they need to sort of survive. I think we're also seeing a growth in alternative institutions, as three I mentioned, really, that are providing these different models of learning to meet the new needs of students. But why is that important? I think that's important for JISC because it's a new market, the new institutions. I think technology will be a big player for all of those new models of education. And that's a new market for JISC to play in and more institutions for it to go. And we're seeing a huge growth in student numbers in the next few years. And I think that's going to have to be addressed within the sector. As technology develops, it's becoming, if you like, leaner and meaner and more environmentally friendly. You know, we see it with all technology as it develops. The capacity increases, the capabilities increase, but it needs to become more cost effective and more efficient. And I think that's just the biggest challenge going forward, is to be able to deliver not the same, but more for less money.
Yes.
The infrastructure that JISC provides is the basis on which we develop all the other products and services that are provided to the education sector. Without that network, without that capability, it will be difficult to deliver those cloud-based software services in an efficient, effective, and should I say secure way. Cybersecurity is a big, big one in terms of delivering this in the education sector.
Yes.
What, in your view, in the last 30 years has significantly shaped the way learning and teaching occurs in universities?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I can say from the 90s that one of the biggest impacts, and I think it's now taken us about 20 years to understand what it is, was the emergence of the internet. That made a huge difference in terms of being able to deliver learning across a network. And I think as we've developed over the last 20 years, that ability to be able to access information, to be able to learn at a distance, remotely, using the internet, using Wi-Fi, using your mobile phone, I think that's had the biggest impact. And potentially still going forward, the biggest impact on learning and teaching. It's that ability to be able to learn, to really learn anywhere, anytime. in terms of the technology. Yeah. And it's been that increasing sort of bandwidth and capability of the technology that's moved things on in a massive way over the last 20 years.
What role has the pandemic played in enabling people to teach online, and what lessons can we learn from that?
I almost want to say, come back and ask me in 5 years' time. I think it was a great accelerator and amplifier of a lot of the issues that were already there before the pandemic around learning and teaching. I think it demonstrated that if institutions wanted to, they could move fast. It broke down a lot of barriers. Although I think we've seen a swing back to a lot more face-to-face activity, teaching, assessment, I don't think people can turn around and say now, oh, you can't do that, because I'm sorry, we did it. The sector did that during the pandemic. So I think there's capabilities there. And, you know, okay, maybe the quality of some of that remote teaching wasn't brilliant. I'm sure it was very well intended, and I know everyone worked really hard in making it happen. But when I look back to some of the learning materials that we were using and developing back in the 90s, that wasn't brilliant either. But it's all developed. You've got to start somewhere. And I think that move during the pandemic made people shift. It made things change. And I hope that we'll see an ongoing benefit from that. It certainly demonstrated what was possible.
Yeah.
We saw what we'd have thought been 3 to 5 years of change happening in some cases 3 to 4 weeks, but in certainly months.
Yes.
In terms of technology.
Yeah.
Thank you to Paul Bailey for his time. This was a special episode of Talking HE for the ALT, JISC and CEDA 30th anniversary. Thanks for listening. I've been Santanu Vasant, and this has been Talking HE.